know, each one of us, there's something in us that we're meant to be doing in this world. But if we're not in an environment that allows us to explore that, like you said, we're going to be cookie cutter, and we don't need, you know, 10 of me or 10 of you. We need one of me, one of you, and one of every other person around us. And collectively together, that's how we do a lot of things that are amazing and are going to hopefully save this world and make the world a better place. And so I think education, especially university environment, plays a role of almost like a lab. Uh-huh. It's like, how do you create an environment that allows people, you know, there's different pathways, right? People who are very clear on what they want to do, like traditional role, more traditional, like a teacher or a lawyer or a doctor.
Yeah.
And so you have a certain pathway. But then there's a huge group of people who are like, I don't know what the hell I want to do. And, you know, that's where, you know, entrepreneurs come in. That's where people who are creative come in, and artists and everything like that, that really allows different things to show up. And if there isn't an environment that allows that, then it's going to be really black and white and boring.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is sponsored by our friends at HostGator. So I've mentioned on a couple of episodes that one of the easiest ways to get started with any creative project is to just build a website. Even if it's something as simple as your bio and a picture of you, it can actually be a really great starting point. And our friends at HostGator are fantastic for helping you to get started because they're providing 24/7 live support via phone, chat, or email. They have an easy-to-use website builder if you're not tech-savvy and don't know how to build websites. And if you want to use WordPress and get your hands dirty, they provide a one-click WordPress install. And because you're an Unmistakable Creative listener, they're offering 30% off all of their hosting packages. So visit HostGator.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for 30% off. Christine, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Srini.
Yeah, it is my pleasure to have you here. So I actually came across your story by way of our mutual friend, Bob Gower. And, you know, when I was asking him for recommendations for people that I should interview, your name actually came to the top of the list. So I want to start with a question that has been a lot of fun and really revealing to me. What did your parents do for a living? And how did that impact your choices that you've made with your own life and career?
Oh, intriguing question. So both my parents, who are the best parents in the world, my father has worked for the post office for, I mean, life pretty much. And then my mom she was in advertising and then worked in credit unions, and now she retired early. So both of my folks have been really instrumental, less, I would say, their quote unquote traditional career paths, but more in the way that they think about careers and how they've supported my brother and I in pursuing what we want to do. Mm-hmm. Because neither of them went to college. But the one thing that they always told my brother and I is try your best and have fun. And mm-hmm. that was the expectation. And I think that has really allowed me to really explore and do what it is that I do in this world.
You know, so the whole try your best and have fun, that seems like such a strange sort of narrative to pass on to your mm-hmm. kids, especially, you know, when your parents are immigrants. I know this, I'm speaking as an Indian, you know, the child of Indian immigrant parents. That was never the message I got, really. It was more like, get an education, and if you want a really good life, become a doctor. so I'm really curious why you think it is that you had such a different narrative despite growing up with immigrant parents.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of luck. I put a lot of that towards it. And then just having my parents be intuitively really smart and really high EQ, mm-hmm. because just like you said, it's like get an education, like traditional, like I'm Chinese. My parents are from Hong Kong. I'm first generation. And everyone's like, oh, tiger mom, or, oh, your parents like helicopter parents, or, you know, these things that you hear all the time about the stereotypical Asian parents. And my parents just always said that. And it's really funny. I share the story when I go back and talk with high school students in particular, saying that I was an AP in high school and AP in college. Mm-hmm. AP in high school meant advanced placement. AP in college meant academic probation. And my parents were like, well, did you try your best? And I was like, yeah, one of my professors just really wasn't meant to be a professor. And they're like, well, there you go. As long as you tried your best and you enjoyed that class, take it again. And that's what I did and passed the second time. But yeah, really, really lucky to have such supportive parents.
So I have a similar story. It was definitely AP in high school. I never got myself all the way to being on academic probation, but my grades were subpar enough that I barely squeaked by. Like, there are moments where I thought, I'm like, I'm not going to graduate, or I'm going to fail out of this place. I'm going to be one of those Berkeley statistics. I'm curious, in the face of something like that, how do you maintain confidence in the face of adversity, especially when you're measured by something external like that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to community, and this will probably come up several times in our conversation, sure. But really having people around you who see the best in you all the time and invite that person to show up continuously. Mm-hmm. I think especially my freshman year, so I went to Santa Barbara. It was the 15th choice on my list of universities, and I was like, what the hell am I doing here? And that first quarter was certainly harsh, and was really lucky to have really awesome suite mates, really awesome people on my floor, and people who were there from, you know, my high school and then people I just met. And I think being able to have a community like that, that's like, you're not an F up, mm-hmm. and you really are here and you're meant to be here. And, you know, if I didn't go to that school, my whole career trajectory would be totally different. Yeah. And so really, really fortunate that I didn't, you know, just leave and be like, this is not for me, I need to go somewhere else, but really, you know, sticking it out and just going through it and making the best of it. And so community is a really, really important part of things.
Mm. You know, it's interesting because, you know, you said the whole trajectory of your career would be so different if you, you know, hadn't gone to Santa Barbara. And I look at, you know, the Pepperdine MBA, which to me, that was, you know, for my grad school, that was like my dead last choice. It was kind of like, this is mm-hmm. where it was kind of like, I have totally fucked up and that's how I've ended up here.
Yep.
And my trajectory would be completely different if I had actually gotten into one of the schools that I wanted to get into.
Yeah.
And so I guess the question then that comes from that is, why do some people adapt to their environments and thrive as a byproduct of their adaptation, and why do others not?
So I will default again to the community, but I'll kind of also go into mindset. Mm-hmm. I think so much of it is, and this is something I think that continuously is being developed, but especially in your early years, but being able to have a mindset where you are really responsive and adaptable and understand that you are, you know, we're here on this earth for a very short period of time and we are just channels. And so if you can understand and get to the point where you are, you know, you're basically, I'm using my hand that you can see me, but you're basically in flow. Like, you, in order to be in flow and to be whatever it is you're meant to be on this earth, you have to be adaptable. And I think having that mindset that allows you to be like taking the shittiest situation and being able to make the best of it, or at least reframe it in a way that is more generative for you and the people around you, mm-hmm. allows you to do that. Granted, I know that I am also very optimistic and very positive in the way I look at things, and environment is very challenging when you think about global scale. Mm-hmm. But I think the way that I've grown up and been able to approach that really has been a lot of the people you surround yourself with, and the way that you see things, you know, happening through you, not to you, not at you. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, being able to work with things.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think that given the sort of pace at which the world is changing, adaptability is one of those things that is just a fundamental skill to actually thriving, because of the fact that the only constant seems to be change.
Totally. Absolutely.
You know, it's interesting because over and over, and I have a feeling this is going to end up being a big theme in our conversation, you keep mentioning the people that you surround yourself with. And, you know, I kind of look at my own life, and when I look at it, I can directly correlate the periods in which I have absolutely thrived to the people that are in my life, or the people that are a constant presence in my life.
For sure. For sure. It's like that whole adage of, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with.
Yep, absolutely.
And I feel really fortunate that those five people change almost on a daily, weekly basis.
Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate because mine are constantly changing as a byproduct of being exposed to people like you.
Awesome.
I'm curious, walk me through sort of the sort of trajectory of your career from leaving Santa Barbara to the work that you've ended up doing today.
Sure. Yeah. So in Santa Barbara, I was really fortunate. I started with an internship with Nike, mm-hmm. and I have this theme that runs throughout my life where I create what I want. And so when I was graduating, I was really fortunate to create a role for myself where I was running basketball tournaments around the country.
Oh, wow.
And it was just like, literally, I was like graduating. I was like, you guys have like different contractors running these tournaments. You should just hire me and I'll do it all. Okay. They're like, okay. And so I was really fortunate to have that opportunity, did that for about 6 years. And then at the same time, you're familiar with the UC system. Yes. UC Merced was just opening, the 10th UC campus. And so I was really fortunate to be a fellow during my senior year. And one of our recommendations during the think tank was hiring recent graduates to be RAs and founding staff members. Uh-huh. And so I went to open that university, super fun, like, here's a hard hat, go figure it out. And I helped them do student leadership, student government, and yearbook, and was probably like the best opportunity right out of college. Because one, when do you get to open a university? Uh-huh. And then two, when do you get an opportunity to be in college but not have to go to class?
That sounds awesome.
So it was really fun, although it was in the middle of nowhere. It is, you know, the quote unquote gateway to Yosemite, but right. Middle of nowhere. And then I came back to Santa Barbara and was continuing to do my Nike job. I'm a workaholic. So back in the good old days when you used to find opportunities on Craigslist, I found this role where it was like international marketing company looking for intern. And so I write to them being like, hey, not a student, don't need to pay me. I'm just really intrigued by the work you guys are doing and just want to get to know what you're up to.
Yeah.
So I go in for an interview with the CEO and I was like, you know, we had a conversation. He was like, great, can you start next week? And I was like, well, I have this other job. I can start in a couple weeks and I can come in like starting at 5:30 a.m. And he like looks at one of his colleagues and is like, are you coming in at 5 a.m.? I'm not coming in at 5 a.m. And so they were an international company. I figured, great, you know, I can come in half a day, whatever, then go to do my Nike stuff. And so I did that for about 2 weeks. And then within 2 weeks, they're like, you're just going to get a key. And I did both jobs about a year and a half. And then at the year and a half mark, they were like, we really need to hire you full time. And I was like, make me a deal. Let's talk about it. And so transitioned out of my Nike job into this startup that was in hospitality. It was kind of like a match.com between uh-huh. luxury hoteliers and corporate meeting planners. You think about being like a Ritz-Carlton and do you want a family or do you want like a company to bring their corporate
sure.
event there?
Yeah.
And so we had a magazine, a website, in-person events. I was number 4 in the company, helped them grow to 35, and basically was traveling around the country testing hotels and activities and spas and dream job, total dream job.
That sounds awesome.
And it was like at a certain point, probably 4-ish years into it, I was like, this is such an incredible dream job. It's no longer my dream job though. I need to go find my next one. Uh-huh. And so I took my first sabbatical then and just traveled around, ironically. And just like had conversations with people. And I think as many people in the startup world know, you like have your blinders on, you're like in the trenches. And when you take a breath of fresh air, you're like, whoa, there's this whole world out there. Mm-hmm. What am I meant to be doing? And so was lucky to come across a fellowship called ProInspire that moved me out to DC. It's like a sector switching program that takes folks who come out of traditional like undergrad, grad school, go into iBanking, investment banking or consulting roles and takes their really functional skills and places them strategically into nonprofits. So really building the talent pipeline. And so did that for a year and a half. Absolutely loved DC. After that, took another sabbatical for about 9 months. And we talked about this briefly earlier, but about dating organizations. Mm-hmm. And so I was really lucky to come across Delivering Happiness at the time. Delivering Happiness was a book that Tony Hsieh, who's the CEO of Zappos, wrote. And I met one of his best friends, Jen Lim, who helped him write the book. And so we got in a Skype chat and, you know, within 20 minutes, like, oh, you know, let's talk about how you can help our team. And I was like, all right, cool. And so really took time to like date them and really understand their business model and their team and their clients and their vendors and all that kind of stuff, and proposed this chief of staff role, which I was until last year. I'm taking my third sabbatical now. Mm-hmm. And so right now I'm just kind of in a really exploratory space around where can I best serve and show up next, because I've always had this drive to be of service when I was young. Mm-hmm. And so right now just taking some time to just be versus do, which we're so programmed to do yeah. all the time. No yeah.
Wow. That raises so many questions. So I have to ask about the basketball thing. I don't know if you've seen it, especially since you coordinated basketball tournaments for Nike. There's a documentary on Netflix called At All Costs, which is about, youth
amateur basketball, but it almost comes across like pro basketball because these kids are basically in the limelight. They're getting, you know, shoe companies sponsoring them. But I guess the real question for me is from, you know, observing sort of what happens in these basketball tournaments and watching elite athletes, what did you learn about performance and goals and achievement?
Yeah, I think I was at a really interesting stage. So I was helping high school athletes get college scholarships, is how I describe it. So it was mainly high school tournaments.
Right.
And so I think even at that level, though, very much to your point, I haven't seen that yet. So I just add it to my list.
Yeah, but I think you'll dig it, especially given the work that you've done.
Yeah, but very much to your point, I think there's so much pressure. And so I think it's almost like you have to kind of protect or nurture people who really love and are passionate about the game, because that's like a very precious spark. And so I think, I don't know, I think you asked more about performance, but being able to, I think, really just allow people to do what they love. And then if they love it, hopefully with practice and persistence and determination and hard work, like, you're going to become good at it. So, so yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, though.
Yeah, you did. I think the most interesting observation was the notion of preserving that spark. And, you know, I think the thing that was most revealing to me about that documentary was the role of parents in preserving the spark, and how a parent can actually basically kill the spark if they're not careful.
1,000% There have been, unfortunately, I have witnessed this multiple times when parents will throw a huge fit, whether at the referee or the coach or anything like that, and that kid is so embarrassed. And it's incredible to almost like, as a parent, it's like, take yourself out of it. It is like, it's not you. It is like your child who is, you know, playing, performing, doing whatever. Like, let them have their moment. It doesn't have to be about you, and don't make it about you. And so it is incredible how parents are a huge part of that, whether it's supportive or disruptive or anything in between.
So these kids who are in high school, who get college athletic scholarships, I'm guessing there is a work ethic and a drive that is involved in that that is above average for a high school student.
Definitely. Yeah.
Wow. I'm trying to think of what it was that I wanted to say. Oh, here's the question. How much of that involves natural talent? Because I look at myself and I wrote myself off pretty much by seventh grade as not an athletic bone in my body. But, you know, I'm a surfer and a snowboarder, which are two incredibly athletic things, which I picked up later in life. And I'm curious how much of what these kids bring to the table is just natural and how much of it is actually the byproduct of the amount of work they put in.
Yeah, I think the first thing that came to mind when you asked that question was creativity. It's almost like one of those things where, of course, there's going to be, you know, natural talent, natural ability. But I really think it's someone's determination and their own belief in themselves and the people around them who can believe in them to do that. And so I recently, very briefly, saw a video of a larger gal who is a ballerina and how she's really breaking that stereotype. And so I think, as a society, there's so much of what a quote-unquote athlete should look like. And so I think it's, of course, natural ability will help propel you, especially if you want to do it professionally. But I think when you're younger, especially in elementary and high school and maybe even college, if you love the sport and, you know, you have a good time doing it, keep doing it. And hopefully the more you do it, especially with people who you enjoy spending time with, I call it like social fitness, then you're just going to have fun and hopefully be in shape while you do it too. So, so yeah, natural ability for sure, especially in, you know, becoming an Olympic athlete or anything like that, or a professional athlete. But I think at a younger age, it's like being able to just have fun and do what you love.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit, because, you know, I knew about the Merced piece. It was one of the pieces that interested me tremendously about your story. I was like, wow, you know, you played a role in building an educational institution from the ground up. And, you know, anybody who's listened to the show knows that I am probably one of the staunchest critics of, you know, higher education in its current form, because I think it's broken. I think it's incredibly broken. I think it's, you know, I said in this piece that I wrote today, it's a one-size-fits-all solution. We would never sell anybody, you know, every single person the same size of shoes and expect them to walk perfectly, but we do that with education and expect them to thrive. So having built an educational institution from the ground up, I'm curious what you think the future of education is going to look like, what's right about it, what's wrong about it, and what would you tell parents who are listening to this?
Yeah.
which are so like three questions in one, I realize.
Yeah, so I'm going to hopefully capture them all. And if I tangent or I might ask you to repeat those questions. Sure. But first, I want to acknowledge I was like a very, very small minutia piece of building that university. But in terms of education, and I think the first part you're asking, like, where is it going or how is it going to continue evolving? Mm-hmm. For that part of the first question?
I think that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, oh, man, this is such a important and big question. I think education, granted, I was not a good student, so I didn't even graduate with a 3.0. So take that with a grain of salt, because just like to your point, I think university, any education is what you make of it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important to, especially for parents who are listening, to really allow their kids to explore and to really support them in the exploration. I really think that so much of education is going towards a path of experience and being able to figure out what are the real world needs and how is the world changing so that we can be, very much to our earlier point, adaptable to how we fill those gaps or really serve and how we're all evolving together. And so I think education plays an important part in terms of a certain part of like, it's important to understand history and what has gotten us here so we don't make the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think being able to teach more around creativity and, you know, human-centered design and things that are around quote-unquote innovation. So I'm in the Bay. It's like, those are all very buzzwords, I know. But being able to just allow people to explore, because, you know, each one of us, there's something in us that we're meant to be doing in this world. But if we're not in an environment that allows us to explore that, like you said, we're going to be cookie cutter. And we don't need, you know, 10 of me or 10 of you. We need one of me, one of you, and one of every other person around us. And collectively together, that's how we do a lot of things that are amazing and are going to hopefully save this world and make the world a better place. And so I think education, especially university environment, plays a role of almost like a lab. Uh-huh. It's like, how do you create an environment that allows people, you know, there's different pathways, right? People who are very clear on what they want to do, like traditional role, more traditional, like a teacher or a lawyer or a doctor. Yeah. And so you have a certain pathway. But then there's a huge group of people who are like, I don't know what the hell I want to do. And, you know, that's where, you know, entrepreneurs come in. That's where people who are creative come in, and artists and everything like that, that really allows different things to show up. And if there isn't an environment that allows that, then it's going to be really black and white and boring. And so, you know, hopefully I think there's some really cool universities out there and other educational institutions that really get that. And they're trying to experiment and explore, but you know, that's a huge shift. And so hopefully we are, you know, all in it for the long game and can start making those shifts, whether in, you know, traditional universities or new ones, and then really learn from each other too. I think that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah. Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is brought to you by Zestful. Zestful helps teams to find and book group activities. You can find unique things to do nearby, invite your team using email or Slack, and book those activities with a single click. By taking the headache out of group activities, Zestful can help your team do fun things and do them more often. And any of the listeners of Unmistakable Creative that book an activity get up to 10% off their first booking. So if you're interested in putting together a team building activity for your team or your company, check out zestful.com/unmistakable. That's zestful.com/unmistakable. Today's episode is also sponsored by our friends at HostGator. So as you've heard me mention in many episodes, I think one of the easiest ways to start any creative project is to just build a website or to buy a domain. And fortunately, our friends at HostGator are fantastic for helping you to get started because they're providing 30% off all of their hosting packages for Unmistakable Creative listeners. They have 24/7 live support via phone chat and email, an easy-to-use website builder if you're not tech-savvy, and one-click WordPress installs. Not only that, if you want to move from an existing host to HostGator, they make it free and super simple. So visit HostGator.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for 30% off. Do you think that everybody should go to school or to college?
That's a funny question. A good question, not a funny question. I think there's been so many incredible young individuals who almost like, here, maybe I'll use this example with, since we've been talking about sports, just like there's some athletes who get offered to go pro early, whether in high school or college, you have a very few, you know, short window of being at your highest physical peak to be able to perform at that level. So very similarly, intellectually wise or creativity wise, there's certain periods of our life where we are, you know, compelled to do different things. And also at the same time, I think when you're younger, you have more optimism and you aren't quote unquote kind of like jaded by things in the big system. And so I don't think everyone has to go to school. I do think that education is extremely important, and you know, figuring out how do you make yourself, you know, aware and educated and you know, knowledgeable, I think is critical. But I think in terms of doing it in a traditional university or college environment isn't always for everybody. And so long answer short, no.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned, you know, physically people are at their peak at a certain age, which I completely agree with. And, you know, you mentioned also that we have certain sort of capacities at a very young age to learn things and develop and become more creative. You know, I have found that my risk tolerance has actually gone up as I've gotten older, partially because probably, you know, I failed at everything I did when I was younger.
Get out of the way early.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, what do you think accounts for the difference between a person whose risk tolerance goes down with age versus a person whose risk tolerance actually goes up?
I think, again, I feel like I'm repeating all my answers, but kind of environment and the people you surround yourself with.
Yeah.
I think the whole risk factor and also, of course, mindset. So the people who surround you, I call it the platinum rule. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were raised on the golden rule, treat others like you want to be treated. But some people treat themselves like shit. So I actually don't want you to treat me like that. So the platinum rule is how do we treat ourselves and others like our best self? So I'm always seeing the best in you and you're always seeing the best in me. And, you know, sometimes all we need is someone to be in our corner, to be our cheerleader, to give us that boost of confidence. And the platinum rule is very upward spiraling versus the golden rule being very status quo. Mm-hmm. And so I think being able to surround yourself with people who believe in that and our values aligned to that and really help you evolve, allow you to take more risks. But if people are like, Srini, why the hell are you doing that? Like, you want to be a basketball player now? Really? Like, what? And like hearing those things, you know, really influence your mindset too. Mm-hmm. And so that is, you know, it's all connected and it all plays a part of that. And I think our environments too, as we grow older, we have different priorities and things change. And so, you know, really being able to foster and maintain an abundance mindset versus a scarcity one allows people to hopefully take more risks, and taking more risks allow us to hopefully make more improvements and really push out towards edges and the fringes to really explore how do we continue, you know, moving up versus staying where we are.
Yeah. You know, another theme that I've kind of noticed throughout our conversation is one of exploration. And that there are two things that you said that I couldn't let go because they were just so interesting to me. One was this notion of creating your own career and creating jobs where ones didn't exist. And the other is you've mentioned multiple sabbaticals. So the two questions come from that. One is, you know, if you were asked, you know, guiding somebody on how do they create what they want to see exist if it doesn't exist, what would you tell them? And two, what is the value of taking sabbaticals, and you know, what have you learned from your own sabbaticals, and how do you get the most out of a sabbatical, and how does that impact your career?
Great questions. The first part in terms of how do you create your own career or your dream career, whenever I talk with anyone, it's always really understanding what lights them up and what drives them and like what they love to do. And so, you know, I'm also really understanding that passion doesn't pay the bills. And so there has to be a balance of that. And so when you think about any kind of dream job, like for me, the reason why I got that hospitality job was I saw a Resorts and Great Hotels magazine at the bookstore one time and was like, who does this? Like, someone has to produce this and do this and figure this out. Why not it be you? And so I think when you are thinking about what you want to do or what your dream career could be, think about where you spend your time if you weren't paid for it. And think about, you know, what that can evolve into, or are there things as you're doing them that you understand and see are opportunities to fill? And so being able to have a lot of conversations with people, I think, is a really important part. And then, like you said, continue to explore and do things that, you know, kind of allow us to stretch our identities. I think we oftentimes put these hats or roles on ourselves, and how do we continue figuring out what lights us up? Otherwise, why are we living? Mm-hmm. And so I think being able to say, okay, well, there's an opportunity. Why not it be me? Start having the conversation. So then hopefully get you into those opportunities and roles and in the room to be able to, you know, raise your hand or be able to be like, hey, I want to try that out. And a lot of times, almost all of my jobs, I've either been an intern or just started out unpaid for just to date and really figure out how is this going to be a mutually generative, beneficial relationship. And then, you know, once they see the value add in you, then you can go from there. And so just really being able to look for those opportunities. And to your second question around sabbaticals, can you remind me the questions again?
Yeah, what have you learned from them? What's the value of them? And how do you get the most out of a sabbatical? And how has each sabbatical impacted each chapter of your career?
Yeah, I mean, sabbaticals are so incredible. I think, like I mentioned, I'm like a workaholic and I love to work because I love what I do, so it doesn't really feel like work. But sabbaticals are also so important because it allows you kind of like freedom of time and space. Uh-huh. We talked about this before we even started this this podcast, but I think being able to like freedom of time and space is like a non-negotiable. And so how do you create that or allow that for yourself? A lot of times it's just giving ourselves permission. And so I think sabbaticals are at least somewhat society okayed thing to do versus being like, oh, I'm unemployed. You know, like I'm fun employed. Oh, I'm just taking a sabbatical. I'm taking time out of my life as a choice to figure out how can I best serve and show up next? Like, where can I be of most service and where is that going to work where I can get paid and have fun and it's hopefully making an impact. And so without sabbaticals, I feel like we just jump from job to job and almost blindly in some instances. I mean, a lot of us are very lucky too, where, you know, your job evolves and it's like, you know, really successful as well. But I think being able to carve out time where you can, you know, do whatever you feel compelled to do. Like right now, my husband and I, we joke that we sometimes feel like we're retired people in the sense that, you know, we're taking time to enjoy life now while we can versus working so hard like our parents and that same mindset of we'll enjoy it later, but later may not come. And so how do you, you know, work hard and play harder and figure out a good cycle for yourself, whatever that is. Like I know there's some artists who take sabbaticals every 6 or 7 years and take like a whole year off. And so how do you work and set yourself up so that you are not in this, you know, scarcity mindset, but you set yourself up for this abundance mindset where it's like, I'm going to work really, really hard so that I can take, you know, a few weeks, a few months, a year or so off to really explore and see what is interesting to me. Like, and that evolves all the time. So being able to do multiple sabbaticals, I think is a really big gift and I understand it's a really big luxury. And, but I also think about it as a really big responsibility for me to figure out what it is that I can do in this world to hopefully help others.
So knowing all of this, you know, this idea of dating, this idea of sabbaticals, why do you think that this is not the way organizations are run and this is not the way we hire? Despite the fact that the results could be astounding and really great for organizations.
Yeah. I think, I mean, at the end of the day, business has to work and run. And so I have a core belief that a lot of businesses start out because they want to do good in the world or they're trying to solve a problem at least. And so I think a lot of organizations, like tomorrow will come. Business will still hopefully be here. And so at a certain stage in organizations, how do you create that space for your employees or your team? So I think a lot of businesses, because they're in this race or this competition with others, which is healthy, I think, but also how do we shift it more towards being more collaborative and more supportive of, if we are, for example, like 5 companies that are all trying to figure out, I don't know, X problem, right? Mm-hmm. Why are we trying to pull at each other's business versus having a conversation with each other and figure out what part of that ecosystem or what part of that spectrum we're each solving? And it's kind of like that team building activity where you get like a piece of wood and it's like, okay, each team gets one piece of wood. Who can get across the fastest? It's like if we actually just put all our planks together and run across, we can all run across much faster than any one team could potentially do it themselves. And so, again, idealistic, optimistic, but think that there's possible ways of running business that way. And so if we can get in a place where businesses feel more safe and more comfortable in doing that, hopefully that will trickle into employees also understanding that their job will still be there. And, you know, everyone's replaceable to some regard. So why not take a sabbatical and take time to go out of your industry and learn? And that whole, there's a book called The Medici Effect. Mm-hmm. That's what it is, where it's like how elephants and epidemics will save the world. So like, how do we help businesses reinnovate that way by learning something that's not in their, you know, in their fields and allowing team members to basically go out and be these awesome kind of like tentacles of information and inspiration and knowledge and then come back and, you know, figure out how it's going to apply to their business and grow it that way. And so I think businesses it's a big mindset shift. And so I think that's why they haven't gotten there. The second part of your question, remind me again of that.
The dating piece, like why is this not the way we hire?
I think it's moving that way. Yeah. At least I'd like to hope so. I think there are a lot of good friends are kind of working at that talent matchmaking mm-hmm. kind of space. And so I think there is a growing, at least from the bubble of the Bay Area, there is a growing move towards talent and bringing people on and building teams that way. I think in other places, it's the whole, again, scarcity of like, we need to get the best talent. We just need to get them now and figure it out and then keep them here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. Sometimes your employees are way more valuable when they're actually not part of your team. Yeah. Like when they leave, but you have a really good rapport, it's like a revolving door, right? It's like, I mean, I feel really fortunate with delivering happiness, even though I'm not involved in a day-to-day basis anymore, to have, you know, a really good rapport with the CEO and the team, to be able to have conversations and still give them opportunities and ideas and things like that. And hopefully it's also generative and beneficial to them. So, so yeah, sometimes your employees are even better when they leave.
So I had to ask you, what did you learn about leadership success and human behavior from working up close with somebody like Tony Hsieh?
So I have to caveat. So Tony, I didn't work closely with Tony. Okay. I describe him as like our Yoda. Uh-huh. He, you know, was an advisor and he's running, you know, Zappos and is also involved in the downtown project. So with delivering happiness, I mean, with the interactions limited that I had with him, it's incredible how much he surrounds himself with people who are really passionate and have good ideas. And he seeds them and kind of gives them space to experiment and kind of just go with it. And so I think it's really incredible from what I've observed and experienced that in terms of leadership, you know, you sometimes want to be the weakest link in some regards. Not saying he is, but I think his approach to surrounding himself with people that are different than him and really being true to themselves allows him to really create, you know, an awesome business like Zappos that at their core is selling shoes or other things online, but they have a really cool culture that allows people to kind of bring in their own unique personalities. And that's why they have such great customer service. Mm. And so I think being able to, you know, invite people and their unique self to show up and creating an environment that fosters that allows everyone to be a good leader, which then of course makes him look like a badass leader. Yeah.
So, you know, there's something I read in your bio that I knew that this would really sort of be the core thing that I wanted to ask you. You know, you talked about tapping into communities to maximize profit potential and happiness. Mm. And I want to talk about how you leverage community to do those three things and how anybody can leverage community both in their lives and in their work to do those three things.
Yeah, I think, we're all connected. Those things are all connected. I mean, this whole world is so connected. And that's what community is. Community is this, you know, body of people who hopefully have aligned values and really want to help each other, you know, do the best individually and collectively. And so when you're in a community, whether you see a community as something that's physical, like your neighborhood, or a community of your team and the people that you work with, or a community of events, like when you go to different events and you go to these programs and things, and that's a community, you're able to really be supported by them. I think that when you think about profit, when you think about purpose, when you think about just, you know, being happy and fulfilled in life, being able to do them in community makes it worth it. Because if you're doing it by yourself, it's kind of lonely and it's not as fun. It's not happy. And, or, you know, most people think that. And then being able to make something that's profitable and something that is value add and the world needs, being able to have community to bounce ideas off of and get different perspectives and get different insights is invaluable. And being able to do things of purpose, hopefully we're all in it to do something that's bigger than ourselves. And that's kind of what community does. It's like when you're a body of people that are doing things, whether, you know, really connected and doing it together or supporting each other and doing it, you're hopefully making momentum and pushing, you know, forward in progress and doing things that are, you know, making the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I think about the sort of role of a community in making us feel like we have a place to belong. And, you know, my friend AJ Leon runs a design agency called Misfit Inc. And, you know, they run a conference in Fargo. And I think never was the power of a community so apparent to me as it was when I went to their conference the first time I was a speaker, but it was a 30 to 40 person conference. And in, you know, 4 years of going to events like this, for the first time, I thought, I've found my people. I belong here.
Nice.
These are my kinds of people. I like the way they think. I like the fact that they're creative. I like the way that this event is run. It's everything that, you know, I hated about events subtracted from the events that I've been to.
Yeah.
It was really amazing because being part of that community fundamentally changed my entire perspective and my whole body of work and how I approached it just from, you know, having, you know, somebody like AJ in my life.
Incredible. Yeah. I think the interesting thing too is that your communities can change and evolve. Mm-hmm. So like I have this kind of philosophy around community of communities. Mm-hmm. And so how do we help people find their tribe at that moment? And then how do you foster those relationships and those bonds and build that rapport? And then sometimes, you know, people evolve, interests change, things like that change, and you go on to different communities. That doesn't mean you're leaving something else. Right. Just like a team, like you are now extending your community reach. And so how do we help communities be more sustainable though? That is a question that I am trying to better understand and think about and support, because I feel really fortunate to be part of multiple communities. Yet at the same time, each community is looking for growth because they think that's going to help them be more sustainable and hopefully make more impact. But my idea and thought is that if communities can support each other's communities and understand how we're all eco-connected, then hopefully we can all do more and be sustainable and you know, take that meta thought of what one community can do into the bigger scope of what a lot of communities can do together.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I think you also made a really interesting observation about the fact that we need different communities at different times in our development, which you know, doesn't mean we're necessarily leaving people behind. But, you know, I noticed that even I outgrew certain, you know, groups that I used to belong to or certain, you know, you just get to a certain chapter where you're like, this is no longer causing me to evolve and grow. So I have to move on from it, not abandon it. But, you know, it's the next chapter inevitably.
Right. Yep. And you want to make space for others, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's going to always be a growing wave of things. How do we help either the community continue to foster that group, or then how does that community evolve with us? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's an interesting question for communities too, is like, are we serving a segment of people, a slice of their life, or are we a community that evolves as people evolve, you know? So yeah, interesting things to think about.
So you know, I think we're going to come full circle, having, you know, been introduced by Bob Dower. I think there's another sort of observation that I just came upon as you were saying that is, you know, finding this sort of distinction between community and cult, and where do you draw the line? Because, you know, you look at things, you know, like the Landmark Forum. This is a great example in my mind, mainly because I heard something in it, which really about it that Dan Kennedy said in a copywriting seminar. He happened to be sitting next to Werner Erhard at a barbershop, and he said, explain the whole Landmark thing to me in one sentence. And Werner Erhard said, we sell independence, but we breed dependence, which that is really disturbing considering, you know, how many, and here's the thing, I've been through the Landmark Forum and I think it's life-changing, but I think that the notion of a community that breeds dependence as opposed to gives people wings, that concerns me.
Right. Yeah. And then, and that's kind of like the scarcity abundance mindset, right? Yeah. So like cults feel like this like ownership towards individuals. And so I think that's, it's like the extremes in some instances. And so, I mean, I joked with you earlier, like cult is a core of culture for organizations,
totally.
But there's a very fine kind of like magic to that. And so being able to think about communities and cults and how do they kind of like interplay with each other? I feel like cults could just be a really extreme end of that spectrum because at the end of the day, they are a community. But like you said, are they fostering the growth of those individuals to be better on their own independently and as part of the group, or just when they're part of that group? Yeah. And so, I don't know. But
who knows? Maybe you've just given me my idea for my next book. Is how do we use the psychology of cults to build, you know, incredible brands and communities?
Yeah, right. Yeah, lots to learn from each other. There's a lot of good things to work from.
Yeah. Well, this has been really, really cool. So I have one final question, which is how we finish all of our interviews at The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Being true to themselves. Like that, a big thing for me is alignment. Mm-hmm. And so being able to be true to that, I think will allow people to unmistakably be themselves. And so being able to honor that, I think is really important. And so people to really live their truth and seek opportunities that are in alignment with themselves, I think will allow them to continue living an unmistakable life. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So where can people learn more about you and your work?
Oh, I have very low social media presence.
Okay.
LinkedIn is probably like my, you know, you can just see what I've done and what I'm potentially up to next.
Cool.
And my contact information's on there. I'm currently like not really online. So I think my cell phone number's on there. So, you know, emailing, text me, whatever. But yeah, hopefully I can be of service or support anyone that needs support, you know, making their dreams happen. That's what I love to do. And so, low social media presence. I really love face-to-face and invest in that. So I joke that I have this personal MO that I would love to be the person that knows everybody, but nobody knows who I am. Mm-hmm. But I'm online, I'm not really super engaged in all the different platforms.
Awesome. Well, this has been fantastic. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that. Next time on The Unmistakable Creative.
One day I was in 11th grade chemistry class, and I was working on a chemistry process after class one day. And all of a sudden I saw three popular girls from the school approaching me in the chemistry lab. And I was a kind of a nerd, geek, but a funny one. But never had I seen three popular girls even glance in my direction. And so what were these girls doing? And so they came and they stood around my little chemical stand there and said, we want to talk to you. And I said, okay. And they said, a girl named Tina, a friend of theirs, didn't have a date to the junior prom. And they knew for sure that I didn't have a date to the junior prom, too, they said. So would it be possible for me to ask Tina to the prom. And I was just absolutely blown away by that because it was something I had never considered in a million years. I don't think I'd really thought much about, you know, social kinds of things up until that very moment. I must have been 15 or 16 years old at the time. But there was this moment of realizing, wow, there's this social world out there with all these different games and rules and things like that. And I knew absolutely nothing about it.
Author Gay Hendricks joins us to talk about tapping into your zone of genius and exceeding your personal limitations.